Welcome to this deep dive. Today we're getting into a really pivotal case in employment law. It's Pew v. Kansas from back in 1981.
That's right. And we've got some solid material to work with, guidance notes, a couple of case briefs, all focused on this one decision. It's a fascinating one.
It really is. And the core of it, well, it's quite a story, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. You've got Wayne Pew, worked his way up at See's Candies for, what, 32 years? Started as a dishwasher, ends up a vice president.
Incredible climb.
Yeah, and then suddenly, boom, fired. And the reason given is just incredibly cryptic.
Look deep within himself. I mean, what does that even mean in an employment context?
Exactly. And that vagueness is part of why this case is so interesting. It really pushed back on the standard ideas about job security at the time.
Right. So for our listeners, especially maybe law students or anyone interested in how employment law actually works on the ground, this case hit some key points about implied agreements and, well, basic fairness.
It challenged that whole at-will employment doctrine pretty directly, at least in California. It made courts look harder at long-term jobs.
So our mission here is to pull out those key legal ideas, see how they played out in Pew, and figure out why it still matters. Make it clear, make it stick.
Okay, so let's lay the groundwork. Yeah. Pew v. Kansas, California case. Mm-hmm. Big deal because it questioned that at-will standard.
And remind us, what exactly is at-will employment?
Basically, it's the default idea that unless you have a specific contract saying otherwise, your employer can let you go for pretty much any reason.
Or no reason at all.
Or no reason at all, yeah. As long as it's not an illegal reason, like discrimination based on race or gender, things like that.
Okay, so it sounds very employer-friendly, that doctrine.
It generally is considered to be, but Pew came along and said, hold on a minute. The court, the appellate court specifically said that, you know, over a long time, the way an employer acts and what they say can actually create an implied agreement.
Implied, so not written down.
Not written down, like an unwritten understanding that you won't be fired without a good reason, what we call good cause. So the relationship itself over time could change the basic at-will rule.
And that's where Wayne Pew's story is so crucial. 32 years. Let's talk about that journey.
Sure. He starts in 1941, dishwasher, works his way up decade after decade. VP of production, eventually sits on the board of directors by 73.
So clearly successful, dedicated.
Yeah.
Any issues before the firing?
Apparently not. The record suggests his performance was good, no warnings, no major criticisms documented, just steady progress for over three decades.
And then he gets back from a business trip to Europe.
Yep. And gets called into the president's office and told he's out with that bizarre look deep within himself line.
Just incredible. Mm-hmm. And Pew himself had a theory about why. Right? Something about union contracts.
He did. He alleged the real reason was because he opposed some changes to union contracts that he felt were unfair to seasonal workers, mostly women.
Okay. So that adds another layer, not just about promises, but maybe about speaking out.
Potentially, yes. That touches on a separate legal idea called the public policy exception, which we can get into. But the core of the Pew decision focused more on that implied contract idea.
Okay, so he sues. What happens first in court? Does he win right away?
No, actually the opposite. The trial court threw his case out pretty early on. It granted what's called a non-suit.
Non-suit. What does that mean, practically?
It means the judge, after hearing Pew's side of the story and his initial evidence, basically decided that, legally speaking, there just wasn't enough there for a jury to even consider. See's Candies argued, even if everything Pew says is true, he hasn't shown a valid legal claim for wrongful termination. And the trial judge agreed.
Wow. So even assuming Pew's facts were right for the moment.
Right, because that's how a non-suit works. The judge has to look at the plaintiff's evidence in the most favorable light possible at that stage.
The judge still said no case here. Seems harsh after 32 years.
It does. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the end. Pew appealed. And this is where things turned around. The appellate court looked at the same evidence and said, actually, wait a second.
Okay, so the appeal court disagreed.
They did. They reversed the non-suit. They said Pew had presented enough evidence that a reasonable jury could find he had an implied contract not to be fired without good cause. That reversal was huge.
So what was the key difference? What did the appellate court see that the trial court didn't or weighed differently This gets us to that implied contract idea, right?
Exactly. The appellate court really dug into this concept of an implied in fact contract, an agreement based not on a written document, but on the party's actions, words, the whole context over time.
Like their behavior creates the contract.
Sort of, yeah. It's inferred from everything that happened between them. And since Pugh didn't have a formal written contract guaranteeing his job,
this implied contract was his whole argument.
Pretty much. And the court laid out this totality of circumstances test. They looked at several factors together to see if this implied agreement existed.
Okay, let's break down those factors. What was in that totality?
First, and maybe the most obvious, was the longevity of his service. 32 years. The court felt the kind of long-term commitment naturally creates certain expectations on both sides.
Makes sense. You stick around that long, you probably assume you're valued and won't be tossed out on a whim.
Right. Second, they looked at verbal assurances. Had company leaders over the years said things to Pugh suggesting his job was secure as long as he performed well?
And have they?
The evidence suggested yes. Assurances linked to loyalty and performance. Not ironclad guarantees, maybe, but words that could lead an employee to reasonably believe they had job security.
So managers need to be careful what they say, even informally.
Absolutely. That's a key takeaway. Third factor, company policy and practices. Was there a general custom at C's of not firing administrative folks like Pugh without a good reason?
And was there.
The evidence pointed that way, that the company had a practice, an established way of doing things that suggested job security for people in his kind of role who'd been there a while.
Okay, so longevity, verbal assurances, company practice. What else?
The fourth factor was really the circumstances of the firing itself. The suddenness, the lack of any prior warnings or documented performance issues, and that really vague, almost nonsensical reason given.
The look deep within himself bit again.
Exactly. It just didn't add up, especially after such a long and apparently successful tenure. It seemed inconsistent with a purely at-will relationship.
So putting it all together, the long service, the promises, the company habits, the weird firing. The court said a jury could reasonably conclude there was an implied deal for job security.
That's the essence of it, yes. The court looked at the reality of the long-term relationship, not just the default legal rule.
Now, what about that other angle Pugh raised, being fired for opposing the union contracts? The public policy thing.
Right. The court acknowledged that as another potential issue. The idea there is that you can't fire someone for a reason that violates a clear public policy, like, say, firing them for refusing to break the law or for reporting illegal activity or potentially for upholding the rights of other workers.
So even if there wasn't an implied contract, maybe the reason for firing was legal.
Potentially. While the implied contract was the main focus of the Pugh reversal, the public policy aspect was definitely lurking there as another possible basis for his claim. It adds another layer of protection for employees in certain situations.
And there was one other legal idea mentioned, good faith.
Ah, yes. The implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. That's a concept that exists in most contracts, including, arguably, employment relationships, even at will ones. It basically means parties shouldn't act unfairly or in bad faith to deprive the other party of the benefits of the agreement.
So maybe firing a 32-year employee for no good reason could be seen as acting in bad faith.
That was suggested, yes. The Pugh court touched on it, although it wasn't the central point of their decision on the implied contract. But it reinforces this idea that employers can't just act arbitrarily or maliciously, even without a formal contract.
Okay, so let's talk impact. What did PUVC's candies really change? What are the big takeaways?
Well, the biggest one is that it put real limits on the at-will doctrine in California. It confirmed that the presumption of at-will employment could be overcome by evidence showing an implied promise of job security based on that whole totality of circumstances.
Especially longevity.
Especially longevity, yes. It became a major factor. This case set a huge precedent. Lots of later wrongful termination cases in California built on Pugh.
So for employees, particularly long-term ones, it offered a new avenue to fight back against seemingly unfair firings, even without a written contract.
Definitely. It empowered long-term employees, but it also meant employers had to be much more careful.
How so?
They needed to think about the messages they were sending, verbally and through their policies. Casual promises, inconsistent practices, those could now create legal risks. Clear job descriptions, written policies, careful documentation, consistent discipline procedures all became way more important after Pugh.
It sounds like it pushed for more formality and clarity in the employment relationship.
In many ways, yes. Or at least it highlighted the potential legal consequences of not having that clarity, especially when you have long-serving employees. It recognized that these relationships evolve.
It feels like it injected a bit more balance, a recognition of the employee's investment in the job over time.
I think that's fair to say. It moved beyond a purely day-to-day transactional view and acknowledged the expectations that build up over years. And it stressed that context matters hugely in employment law.
Even though it's a 1981 case, do these ideas still hold weight today with how much work has changed? Gig economy, remote work, etc.
I think the underlying principles absolutely do. The idea that conduct and words create expectations, that's still relevant. Maybe you see it with long-term contractors arguing about expectations of renewal, for instance.
Interesting.
And the public policy exception, protecting people who speak out about wrongdoing or refuse illegal orders, that's perhaps even more critical today. Plus, the basic idea of good faith acting fairly, that should always apply.
So wrapping this up, the big takeaway from PUVC's candies for everyone listening is really how a long working relationship combined with company actions and words can shift the ground under that basic at-will idea.
Exactly. It showed that courts will look at the whole picture, the totality, to see if an implied promise of job security was created, meaning an employer needs a fair reason, good cause to fire someone.
Which leaves us with a pretty interesting question to think about, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, in today's world, where work is so different, maybe shorter 10 years, different communication styles, remote setups, how do these Pew principles play out? What kind of implied promises or expectations are being created now? Maybe through Black messages or company culture initiatives, you know?
That's a great question. How do you measure longevity or assurances in a gig economy? What constitutes company practice when teams are dispersed? It really makes you think about how these foundational ideas adapt.
Definitely food for thought. Understanding cases like Pew is so key to seeing those nuances in workplace relationships today. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.